You know, one of the challenges is different people have different preferences, but also a lot of people just don't get the concept. And there are so many things. If you want the water coming out of the faucet to be hotter, if you turn it farther, it gets hot sooner. You know, but with a thermostat, that just tells the furnace or air conditioner when to shut off. It doesn't change how fast it heats or cools.
At my workplace, the thermostat is locked, and I just freeze at all times of year. And my solution is to bring a sweater.
Yeah. So, let's get rolling again. Any other questions about guided discovery before we move on?
Go ahead. Okay, I have one quick question. I might be jumping the gun, but I feel like this happens with the borderline patient, but sometimes with some of the patients that are struggling with depression. Sometimes I feel like going through the process of guided discovery, there's always another hurdle. So the process, I follow it, but there's been a couple times, I have a feeling this is wrong, but I'm just going to tell it myself. Where I'm just like, okay, we're done with guided discovery because I can't have another negative. Do you get what I'm saying?
There are a couple different pieces to it. One is, I'm not saying that we have to use guided discovery 24/7 and never tell anybody anything. Okay. You know, I'm emphasizing guided discovery because most people underuse it and spend too much time handing people the answer.
Okay.
But particularly if, you know, guided discovery takes a little while. If we got 2 minutes left in the session, you know, I may well explain something to the person rather than taking the time to help them work it through, because we just don't have, I got a choice. I could explain it to them today, or I could wait till next week and help them figure it out for themselves. And with most clients, most of the time, a moderate amount of explaining things to them is not a problem. I don't want to rely on that completely, because that's, you know, they get less out of it that way. Yeah, so it's a question of a balance between the two. But another piece of it is, it's guided discovery. You know, if somebody's just going on and on telling me this negative stuff and that negative stuff and more negative stuff, it's completely legit for me to say, well, I think I've got a real clear understanding of all the negative thoughts you run into. Now, how about, you know, and I can switch into problem-solving mode. I can switch into looking critically at the thoughts mode. I could switch into recognizing the connection between, you know, when you're thinking all these thoughts, how do you end up feeling, and so on. So it's completely legit to say, you know, that's enough, now let's move on. That's the guiding part of guided discovery.
Okay.
Now, if we're going to be doing CBT here, and one chunk of that is cognitive, we're working on cognitive interventions this morning. And that means that part of what we want to get out of guided discovery is an understanding of the thoughts that are running through the client's head, and that came out just fine in Chris's video. It turns out that there are some details in how you do it, which makes a big difference in getting at the individual client's cognition, particularly your people who are psychologically minded and self-aware. You know, you ask what thoughts ran through their head, they tell you. It's easy. But what portion of your caseload is psychologically minded and self-aware? You know, there are a lot of perfectly fine people who don't spend much time paying attention to their thoughts and feelings, and if you just ask them, they draw a complete blank. They have no idea what thoughts and feelings are going through their head. And obviously, the way to find out is to ask, but how you ask makes a big difference. A little experiment to test this out. Pick a blank plate spot on the paper, you know, maybe the backside of one of the handouts or whatever. And I think it's a good bet that all of you procrastinate from time to time. You know, just, you know, write down what thoughts run through your head when you're procrastinating. And I won't actually pause long enough to let you write down lots of thoughts. My point is, you know, some of you find yourself remembering thoughts and writing them down. And some of you find yourself drawing a complete blank. Why? Is it because no thoughts run through your head when you're procrastinating? Is it because this is a resistance? Is it because those thoughts have been repressed? It's sort of a pop quiz. You didn't know I was going to ask about your thoughts when you procrastinate, so you weren't ready for it, which is a situation clients often find themselves in. But B, just asking cold like that doesn't give you a whole lot of retrieval cues. And the way human memory works is our memories are indexed in a variety of different ways, but not real thoroughly and efficiently. It's sort of like a library with an old school card catalog where you things are listed by author or title or content, except that a bunch of five-year-olds have gone through and trashed the card catalog. So some things are still listed by title, and some things are still listed by author, and some things are, but not very completely and thoroughly. And so if I just ask, you know, where do you find books on history, you know, we may or may not find it quickly and easily in the card catalog. The more retrieval cues we provide, you know, if I say, this is the author, this is the title, this is what it's about, then we can look it up in three different ways, and that improves our odds of finding them. So let's try doing it a little differently. Again, find a blank spot on the paper. And first of all, think back to a time when you remember procrastinating. Pick an example that you remember reasonably clearly, and that's pretty typical for you. And then think about, what was the situation? Where were you? What led up to it? You know, something like, hey, I was in the office, I got a message, my client had canceled, I've got an hour free, I could catch up on my paperwork. And I find myself surfing the web instead. Okay, do you remember how you were feeling? Write down what you were feeling. Now, what thoughts do you remember running through your head on that particular occasion? And the odds are, more of you find yourself remembering thoughts that you can write down. Part of it is, you know, finding out about taking one specific example makes it a much easier question to answer. If I ask, what thoughts run through your head when you're procrastinating, that sort of presumes the same thoughts are running through your head each and every time. And the odds are different thoughts are running through your head on different occasions. If we pick one specific occasion, that's an easier question to answer. If I have you fill me in on the situation and what led up to it, that gives me some useful information, but it also provides some retrieval cues. You know, to some extent, our memories are indexed by where we were and what was happening when the experience occurred. By asking how you were feeling, that provides a pretty powerful recall cue in that our memories are pretty strongly indexed by emotion. Our brain tends to figure that whatever is upsetting is important and tends to categorize things in that way. And so if I find out about, I take one specific example, find out what the situation was and what led up to it, find out how you were feeling, and then ask what you were thinking, that improves the odds of you remembering what you were thinking. This is a useful thing to do, and it doesn't take a whole lot of time and energy. So, if you're on page 7 in the handouts, we've got this written down. One of the things that is challenging at first, if I'm going to pick a specific point in time to focus on, this takes a little practice because it's more complex than it seems. If you look on the board here, I've stuck up a procrastination example. The client is saying, I can't get started on my paperwork, and when I do, it takes forever. I feel so bad about being behind that I can't sleep at night. And on the surface, this seems like one specific, great, we got a specific example here. Wait a minute, do we have a specific example? Is the client talking about one particular occasion when they were behind on their paperwork? Or have they glommed a whole bunch of different occasions in together here? Well, we don't know yet. We'd have to ask the client to find out. But the odds are they're glomming together a whole bunch of different experiences rather than talking about one specific one. So a good jumping off point would be, great, this sounds really useful. Let's look at this in a little more detail. Can you pick one particular occasion where procrastination was a problem for you? You know, pick something you remember reasonably clearly, probably something fairly recent, something pretty typical. And I could have them fill me in on the situation and the emotions. But what point in time do we want to focus on? You know, is this a particular point in time? Well, we've got, I can't get started on my paperwork. We've got the point in time where they haven't started yet. When I do, it takes forever. We've got the point in time when they've gotten started and they're not being very efficient and productive. I feel so bad about being behind. We've got a point in time when they're not currently doing paperwork, but they're thinking about how far behind they are in their doing their paperwork. We've got, I can't sleep at night. That's at night when they're having trouble falling asleep. So we've got four different points of time. You know, even if we take one specific occasion, do we want to focus on an occasion where they can't get started on their paperwork? Or an occasion where they've gotten started and aren't being very efficient and productive? Or an occasion where they're feeling bad about being behind on their paperwork? Or an occasion on which being behind on their paperwork is making it hard for them to fall asleep? Which of those do we want to focus on? Well, it depends on what we're trying to accomplish today. In ongoing therapy, the odds are we're going to want to get to each of those eventually. And so it circles back to today's agenda. You know, today, are we trying to help them get started on their paperwork? Or are we trying to help them be more efficient and productive when they're doing their paperwork? Or are we trying to help them not feel so bad about being behind on their paperwork? Or are we trying to help them get a good night's sleep? Those are all perfectly fine things to work on in therapy. They all sound like they're worth working on. Am I going to accomplish all four of those in a single session? Not me. That's more than I can accomplish in a 50-minute hour. So we're going to want to choose our targets. Now, when we set the agenda for today's session, I may already know which of those are important to the client this week. Or I may declare, okay, now we're getting some understanding of what's going on with your procrastination. It's more than we can cover in an hour today. Do you want to focus on, you know, the difficulty getting started? Or do you want to focus on the difficulty being efficient and productive once you get going? Or do you want to focus on not feeling so bad about it? Or do you want to focus on getting a better night's sleep? And I can get the client's vote. Now, obviously, if I see some reason, if they're on the verge of being fired because they're behind on their paperwork, then I'm going to vote for focusing on getting started and being more efficient and productive. But all things being equal, the client's vote is something I'm going to take real seriously. And basically, we want to focus on the points in time where they're having a problem. You know, in the role plays, if your client's goal is to get to the gym more often, then what points in time do you want to focus on? Probably the points in time when they intend to go to the gym and find themselves not heading out the door on their way to the gym. You know, if you're trying to help your client speak up for themselves, you're probably going to want to focus on situations where they'd like to be able to speak up for themselves but hesitate to. You know, if you're helping your client, you know, not feel so bad about crabbing at their kids, you probably want to focus on points in time when they feel bad about crabbing at their kids. If you're trying to help them not crab at their kids so much, you might want to focus on the points in time right before they crab at their kids. You know, so basically I want to think, at what point in time is this person having a problem? Let me find out what the situation is, what led up to it, how they're feeling, what thoughts are running through their head. And in a lot of situations also, and then what did they do? And that'll probably, you know, clear up the mystery considerably and give some ideas as to what we can work on. How's that sound? And it gets much easier with practice. We'll be practicing in just a few minutes. Another thing that really helps in pinpointing automatic thoughts is getting a clear image of what I'm looking for. You know, it would be much simpler if clients just told us about the situation and nothing else, and then told us about their feelings and nothing else, and then told us about their thoughts and nothing else. It would be real easy to tell when they're telling us about their thoughts, but in real life, clients are not that cooperative. They haven't been trained in this stuff yet. This is what we're working on. And so they're, you know, they may well be enough in touch with their thoughts enough to express them, but it's mixed in with their general comments and their description of the situation and their description of their feelings, and they may not have a clear distinction between thoughts and feelings and so on. So everything's all mushed together. And when stuff is all mushed together, it's easier to spot what I'm looking for if I have a clear sense of what I'm looking for. When I was a kid, one of my dad's hobbies was collecting mineral specimens and arrowheads. He's a geophysicist. And so we go on long family driving vacations, and at some point during the day, we'd pull over at an empty field in the middle of nowhere where you could find agates, or you could find arrowheads, or you could find garnets, or whatever. And we'd wander around looking at the ground, not finding anything. And then somebody would find one, and we'd all rush over and ooh and ah. And then we'd be finding them right and left, even though it's the same patch of dirt we'd been walking over for half an hour. Because once we had a clear picture, it was easier to spot what's there. And so we're going to get a little practice at spotting automatic thoughts as they go by. First of all, you know, it's handy to have an intellectual picture of what we're looking for. What do we mean when we talk about automatic thoughts? We're talking about the person's immediate spontaneous reaction. You know, just what, you know, people often refer to it as their gut reaction, even though we'd argue it happens in one's head much more than it happens in one's gut. But it's the immediate spontaneous, I get a note that the boss wants to see me, and my immediate reaction is, oh my God, I'm in trouble now, or oh wow, I'm finally getting that raise. You know, it's not the result of me sitting down and analyzing the situation. It's my off-the-top-of-my-head reaction. They tend to be specific, discrete, plausible, idiosyncratic, you know, simple, declare, oh my God, now I'm in trouble. You know, oh wow, I'm getting that raise. You know, if the client says to me, well, I was thinking about how if I don't do this right, then I'm going to be in big trouble, so then I'm hesitate to get started. That's not an automatic thought. It might be a paraphrase of an automatic thought. It might be a summary of a half dozen automatic thoughts. You know, it's too complex and convoluted to be an automatic thought. You know, sometimes we don't have to actually do anything to get the automatic thoughts out in the open. We happen to be working with a client who just spontaneously, in talking about stuff, mentions automatic thoughts, among other things. And then all we need to do is spot them as they go by. But this takes some practice, so we're going to get some practice. We're going to go to the videotape. We've got a client of mine, a depressed engineer. He's much more depressed than he looks. He's not very emotionally expressive. I think at this point he had just spent several days in bed, only getting out of bed to go to the bathroom. I'm not certain it was this session. But anyway, he's quite depressed. And we're talking in general terms. He had procrastination is one of our themes for today, just as a good example. He has the most major league procrastination I'd encountered up to this point. This guy has lost 3 jobs because he can't get his paperwork turned in. Even though he's a good engineer, he does his work is good. When he turns it in, he gets good evaluations, but he couldn't get himself to turn his paperwork in, and he's lost 3 jobs that way. And so, you know, we're just leading into this, and up to this point, we've been talking about it in general terms, and we're about to get to more specific situations. And, you know, he happens to mention an assortment of automatic thoughts. As you listen to this, when you hear something that sounds like an automatic thought, just raise your index finger. Everybody else is going to be doing that. I'm going to be doing that. And it'll give a sense of how much consensus there is about what sounds like an automatic thought and what doesn't. Now, in real life, we might well not be certain if that's a thought that ran through his head in the heat of the moment or not. I would write it down and I would, well, you said X. You know, did that run through your head in the heat of the moment? And I'll find out.
Well, I know there's days where, even like going back when I worked for the insurance company, the Sutherland, if it was a day that I was feeling good about myself, oh yeah, you're doing a good job, you know, somebody had said you did a good job and this and felt good, I could tackle a harder problem and be more successful with them on a day like that, than if it was a day that I was down and oh, the boss wants this and you're late on that or whatever. I wasn't feeling real good about myself. Mm-hmm. Then the problem, whatever it would be, would kind of turn into a real stumbling block to try and get it done.
Yeah. So the way you described it there made it sound like it wasn't just move your mood in general, but having a lower opinion of yourself.
They kind of tie together.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's hard to be real cheery when you feel like a loser.
in my opinion, you know, I had days when I didn't feel confident, like, oh, you don't belong here, you're not able to do the job, or whatever. It was that the mood would swing down and procrastination, oh, it was real hard to start something, or you're not going to be able to do it, or you're not going to do it right anyhow, or whatever, even though, you know, like, when my boss was talking to me, he said, you know, when I get your work, it's great. He said, you know, the problem with getting in a timely manner, but he says, you know, I have no questions of your engineering ability. He says, everything you've done is done right. He says, a lot of times done better than what I really wanted it to be. It all depends on how I'm feeling.
Yeah. And right.
Questions, comments? You can see how when it's all blended together, it's not easy to spot the thoughts as they go by. It's, you know, easy for them to get lost in the undergrowth. I wasn't writing them down, so I don't have a comprehensive list, but, you know, some of the ones that stood out is you're not going to be able to do it, you're not going to do it right anyway, you know. And, you know, sort of a lot of self-evaluation and self-criticism, you know. And, you know, if you think about it, if I've got a report to turn in, and I'm thinking, I'm not going to do it right, et cetera. You know, if I'm anticipating my boss being critical of me, you know, it makes sort of a fair amount of sense that the person would hesitate to get started on it, you know, would have a hard time motivating themselves to, you know, plug away and get it done, and that the actual moment of turning it in would be the scariest part. And it would be easy to keep polishing and polishing and polishing, you know, because I doubt that it's good enough. And so that gives me some initial ideas as to why he's having so much trouble with procrastination. Now, as we work on it longer, we'll find out how much of my, you know, initial understanding is accurate and how much isn't. How's all that sound? Now, most clients don't make it easy for us by just spontaneously volunteering the information we need. Most of the time, we're going to need to ask and... you know, what we want to do is help them pick a specific concrete situation where the problem we're working on manifests itself. You know, focus on the point in time where their difficulty occurs. Find out what led up, what the situation was, what led up to it, how they were feeling, and then ask what thoughts ran through their head. You know, they may tell us, or they may lapse into talking more about their feelings and the situation and so on. And so we may need to ask more than once to get them to tell us what thoughts were running through their head. Let's take a look at another example.
About tonight. What are you worried about? I guess just feeling really uncomfortable. Because there's been times before when I've had to get up and read. And this summer, I had, this was a Chinese restaurant too. And it's kind of a good experience in a way because I got up and I went to the bathroom and I was really alone and I just wanted to get out of there, you know? I just like wanted to get away, get out, you know? I was like ready to leave and then I went back and Linda knows about it. She was there with me at times. She just said, come on, you want to go outside and get some fresh air? And I said, yeah, you know? But she didn't drive, somebody else drove. So it wasn't like I could just say, like, let's go to Sam's sick or something, you know? So I had to go back in and eat. And everybody was asking me, like, if I had eight that day, maybe that's why I wasn't feeling so well and stuff like that.
So here, you know, Barb has, you know, helped the client identify a specific point in time, and actually the client right at this very moment while she's talking to Barb is nervous about something she has planned this evening. And so Barb says, great, we can work on this in the here and now. What thoughts are running through your head right now about this evening? And the client launches into telling her all about something that happened last summer. Okay, people don't always answer the question we ask. How does Barb want to handle that? You know, she could say, no, that's not what I asked. Tell me about this evening. That obviously does not establish the kind of therapeutic relationship, you know, we're looking for. A, you know, Barb's going to redirect her to focusing on her concerns about this evening, but she's going to do it gently rather than, you know, punitively, you know, in terms of a decent therapeutic relationship. Also, Barb's getting some useful information out of this, so we don't need to cut it off this second. You know, if the client wanders off into something related, you know, tangential but relevant, and we're getting useful information out of it, you know, that's completely fair game. Now, you know, as far as I can tell, the client hasn't volunteered any particular automatic thoughts, but she has said some things that give us some pretty good guesses. You know, she, you know, said she, you know, felt like she really wanted to get out of there. Well, it wouldn't be at all surprising if one of the thoughts that ran through her head was, I really want to get out of here. I don't know yet, for sure. That's a pretty good bet. At some point, I don't remember if she said it yet or not, she said, well, I didn't shake apart. Okay, that sounds like she was anticipating that she would shake apart. You know, that's probably a thought that was running through her head. It's really useful to keep in mind that these are guesses on my part. I don't want to lose track of which parts are my guesses and which parts are things the clients actually told me. When I'm writing stuff down in my notes, how do I keep straight what's a guess and what I know for sure? Well, I don't know a right answer to that. It's useful for each of us to come up with our own way of keeping that straight. If your memory is so wonderful that you can keep that straight in your head, great. Congratulations on your memory. My memory is not that good. What I do, and I think is a useful way of doing it, is when I was a kid, I learned Spanish. We lived in Cuba for a couple of years before the revolution. I've lost most of my Spanish, but one of the things that I retained was, in Spanish, when there's in writing, when there's a question, they do an upside-down question mark at the beginning and a right-side-up question mark at the end. And so all the way through the sentence, you know it's a question. In English, you don't know it's a question until you get to the end of the sentence. And so in my notes, I use that, you know, for something that's a guess on my part, a hypothesis, something I'm speculating about, I do an upside-down question mark at the beginning, a right-side-up question mark at the end, and that makes it obvious that this is a question, not something I know for sure. And then if in 2 minutes the client confirms that, yes, that is what was running through her head, I can just cross off the question marks, and I don't even have to rewrite it. You know, if it turns out in a few minutes I discover I was wrong, I can cross the whole thing off so I don't confuse myself. You know, and I find that simpler and easier than, you know, writing out this is my guess or using a different color ink for my guesses or whatever. It seems like a useful shorthand. But, you know, I want to, you know, keep straight which are my guesses and which has the client actually told me. Now, here the client has wandered off into talking about something that happened last summer. Barb's going to want to redirect her to, okay, but what thoughts are running through your head now about what you've got planned this evening? Since anticipatory anxiety is a big part of her problem, we want to find out what she's thinking, and her main problem is social anxiety, so we want to find out what's going through her head as she anticipates social situations. And here we've got one good example. She's got a social activity planned for this evening. She's anxious about it now. The odds are that relevant thoughts are running through her head now.
Then there's an 8, and so you didn't answer. So yeah, I kind of had to, but then I found that I didn't shake apart. You know, mm-hmm. I was kind of upset with what had happened, but I didn't lose it. You know?
Mm-hmm. Now, when we're talking about thoughts running through your mind, it turns out it ends up being the most useful if we can kind of try and catch them kind of as they flip through your mind. And usually, so the more we can quote how they kind of zip through, the better. Mm-hmm. Because that's, we can talk about the thought,
right.
But if you can kind of catch what you're really saying to yourself right at the time, it ends up being even more useful in terms of changing them. So, right now you're thinking ahead to this and you're kind of anxious about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, this would be a good time. Just now, as you think about going out tonight, can you quote some of the thoughts that you're zipping through there?
Yeah.
Like what?
I'm going to feel like, what if I really start shaking and get upset, you know?
Okay, what if I really start shaking and get upset? Okay, what else?
What if, this is the same old thing, but it's like, what if somebody asks me, why are you so, what's the matter with you, you know?
So what if someone asks me, what's the matter with you?
Mm-hmm.
What else?
I guess a fear, a thought. What if I have to get up and leave?
I said, what if I have to get up and leave?
And repeating the thoughts back to the person as you write them down is useful. A, it lets the person know that you've heard and understood, which is a good thing. B, it increases their awareness of the thoughts. C, if you've got it wrong, it gives them a great opportunity to say, no, that's not it, and correct you.
I think that when I get that nervous or tense that I look weird too, and that somebody's going to notice it, that's my thing. So the kind, if you had to quote that kind of, what if I was really tense, like my neck gets real stiff and I kind of, you know, when you're frightened by something, like kind of, I kind of like jar the apple, I don't really do that, but I think I kind of like sometimes people are talking to me and kind of bug out the eyes and stuff, because I get like real. When I'm real nervous, I get really tense, and it's
so it's become. If what if I tense up and what?
It's hard to put this kind of stuff into words without sounding goofy.
Or do you not think of it in words? Is that one that do you get a picture in your mind of how you'd look if you were anxious?
Yeah, kind of.
Sometimes get a kind of a flash of a.
Oh, what if I?
Look like that?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's more...
And Bart spends a couple more minutes clarifying that. One handy thing to keep in mind is not all thoughts are in words. With depression, it tends to be thoughts and words that are important. And so with depression, that's probably what we're going to spend most of our time on. In anxiety, images are often an important part of it. I think I used the example last time. If I, you know, walking through the woods and encounter a bear... You know, I might have the thoughts, you know, oh my God, a bear, it may eat me, march through my head. That's possible. I don't think it's terribly likely. You know, I may have an image of the bear smacking his teeth with bits of my clothing stuck between his teeth that communicates the same message more quickly and vividly. You know, or I may just have an abstract sense that bears in the woods are dangerous to hikers. You know, so we can have thoughts in words, we can have thoughts in images, we can have abstract thoughts. Now, in order to write stuff down, I need to get the person to try and describe the image. I need to have the person fill me in on the abstract thought, because to write stuff, unless I'm going to spend my time trying to sketch her image of herself. In this case, it turns out, when she was an adolescent, she had some drug problems, and she got placed on an adult unit with schizophrenic adults with tardive dyskinesia. And that's her image of what she looks like when she gets anxious. It's not at all reality-based, but that's what she's afraid she'll look like if she gets too anxious. Questions, comments at this point? Yeah. So the ideal is if we can identify a real-life problem situation, get the person to fill us in on the situation and what led up to it and their feelings and their thoughts, and we write down the thoughts, and great, now we've got the thoughts, and we're ready to start addressing them. What if we try doing that and the person doesn't remember? Do we want to put a lot of pressure on them to get them to remember, get them to remember? No, that's going to result in the person making stuff up. And it's not useful to get them to make stuff up, because then we don't know if that's what happens in real life really or not. And so I want to see about helping the person remember what they can remember. But get legit information that's likely to be reliable. So it's important to acknowledge the limits of memory. Sometimes we don't remember stuff. And if I don't remember stuff, just putting a lot of pressure on is not a real effective way to get me to remember. If we take a situation, find out about what led up to it, thoughts and feelings, and the client draws a blank talking about thoughts, we've got a number of different options. One is, we could pick a different situation and find out about what the situation was, what led up to it, how they were feeling, do they remember what they were thinking in that situation? And sometimes people remember the details in one situation and not another. Particularly if we're working with a depressed person, a lot of depressed people are real quick to feel like they're failing. So if I ask the person what thoughts they remember and they don't remember any thoughts, if I just leave it at that, they may feel like they're failing at therapy or whatever. One of the things I want to do is normalize the experience. It's often hard to remember the details in upsetting situations. It's real common for people to, remember what the situation was or remember how they felt, but not remember what thoughts were going through their head. Were you paying attention to your thoughts in that moment? Did you know I was going to be asking about this stuff? We can try a different situation, see if the person remembers there. We can try, how about if between now and next session notice times when you get more depressed and pay attention to what the situation is and what led up to it and how you're feeling and try to notice any thoughts running through your head in that situation. Would it be handy to jot down some notes to make it easier to remember the details? Another option I've got is using imagery or a role play to recreate the situation. For example, I had a client I was working with who had problems with both intense depression and intense anxiety. And she remembered a time when the depression and anxiety were a problem for her. Friend's kid was having a birthday party, and she was going out to buy a birthday present for the kid. She walked into the local discount store and was just overwhelmed by depression and anxiety. Great. We got a situation. We got what's led up to it. We know how she's feeling. What thoughts does she remember going through her head? There were no thoughts whatsoever. Her mind was a complete blank. And I don't know that it's impossible, but my mind is hardly ever a complete blank. It's possible there were no thoughts there. Or it's also possible you aren't particularly paying attention to the thoughts and don't remember them at the moment. One thing that can make it easier to remember the details is if we take the situation and imagine it as realistically as possible, would she be willing to give that a try and see if any thoughts pop to the surface? Sounded fine to her. So I got a couple more details of when this happened and had her settle back in a comfortable position, shut her eyes to make it easy to visualize clearly, and had her imagine driving down Northfield towards Best Buy. Gentle rain is falling. Imagine turning right into the parking lot. Imagine parking in the parking space she parked in. Imagine walking into the store and turning right to go to the toy section. And before this, I'd instructed her to signal me by raising her index finger if the emotions hit. Because for most people, if they talk while visualizing a scene, it tends to disrupt the image, but they can raise their index finger to signal without it disrupting the image. That's a piece of trivia about imagery I happen to know. And so she signals, and even if she hadn't, it was obvious from the nonverbals that she'd been hit by intense emotion. Okay, notice how you're feeling, and notice any thoughts that are running through your head. Okay, open your eyes. What emotions hit you? All this intense anxiety, intense depression. Did she notice any thoughts running through her head? Oh, yeah. I could never have a kid. I couldn't love them. Was one of them. Okay. Now, if we were doing rigorous research, how do I know that this is what thought ran through her head in real life as opposed to a new thought that's happening in response to imagining the situation? I don't know. And if we were doing rigorous research, this would be a problem. But am I doing rigorous research? No, I'm doing therapy. And if the thoughts the person has when they imagine the scene triggers the same emotions, then they're functionally equivalent. They have the same effect. And that's good enough for our work. So now we've got some thoughts that when they run through her head, she experiences intense depression and intense anxiety. Great. This gives us a wonderful starting point on dealing with her depression and anxiety. Now, sometimes the person doesn't remember any thoughts, but you got some pretty good guesses. Like, you know, she's saying, I didn't shake apart. Okay, I'd bet a large pile of money that she was anticipating shaking apart. Do I want to say, gee, were you thinking, I'm going to shake apart? The problem with it sounds simple and straightforward. The problem with doing it that way is if the client says, yes, doc, you're right, you're brilliant. You know, I don't know if they're saying that because I've got it right and I am brilliant, or if it's because it sounds good to them intellectually, or if they want to be a good client, want me to like them. And So if I just say, weren't you thinking X, and they say, yes, that's it, I don't know if I've got it right or not. What works much better is to convert it into a multiple choice test. Gee, in a situation like this, some people would be thinking, oh my God, I'm going to shake to pieces. And other people would be thinking, what if somebody notices? And other people would be thinking, I've got to get out of here. And other people would be thinking, oh my God, I'm going to die. If I can present a number of plausible alternatives, now ideally several that I don't think were running through the client's head, then if the client says, it's this one and this one, not those others, they're not just saying that to agree with me, and any of them would be agreeing. It improves the odds that, you know, they're picking certain ones because they're pretty close to right. It's even better if the client says, nah, it's none of those, this is what I was thinking. You know, then I've got a pretty good bet that I've got it right. But that's a last resort. If we can get identify the thoughts in a more open-ended way, then there's less risk that I'm biasing the witness. Questions, comments, reactions? Okay, let's pass these around quickly. We are now going to try this out in semi-real life. So we're going to break up into 2 3-person groups and 2 2-person groups. And, the copy place may have messed some of this up, because the one I got off the stack is the wrong one. Okay. You've got the wrong one. Everybody else, I think, has the right one. So let me grab one of those. It should say on the top of the thing, this is a therapy session early in treatment after goals have been set. If it says that thoughts have already been pinpointed, you've got the wrong one. But I think now we've fixed the copy places error. And so goals have been set. We haven't pinpointed any automatic thoughts yet. And so when you're in the therapist role, you're going to be trying to pinpoint automatic thoughts. You're not addressing them. You're not solving the person's problems. You're just pinpointing automatic thoughts. And so the client will hand you the sheet of paper with their goal on it so that you don't have to ask them what their goal is, which means you need to have the sheet of paper with your goal on it with you, you know, suitable for handing to the therapist. You know, as therapist, you're going to greet the client. You're going to find out what they want to work on today. This may be the point where they hand you the goal. But anyway, when you're a client, tell them, I want to work on whatever your goal is. I want to work on getting to the gym regularly. I want to work on not crabbing up my kids so much, whatever the goal is. We're not complicating things. We're not making it hard for our colleagues. The therapist is going to say, great, let's work on that. You know, it's quicker and easier to understand what's going on if we pick a concrete example. Can you think of a good example of a situation where this problem occurred? As therapists, you're going to help the client pick a good concrete example. You're going to find out what the situation was, what led up to it, what feelings were they experiencing, what thoughts do they remember running through their head. You know, they will answer your questions. You will write stuff down, so you need to have a writing implement and a piece of paper. And once you've got several thoughts written down, that's it. You're done. That's all for this morning's role play. You know, discuss it for a couple minutes. We got some suggestions, you know, for feedback from the observer and for things to consider as you discuss it. And then switch roles so that each person gets to be therapist once. I'll be circulating around, observing, answering questions, providing feedback. And once Each of you has a couple automatic thoughts written down in a form that you're going to be able to read later this afternoon. We'll resume back in here and move on. And this afternoon, you'll be trying to address some of those thoughts. Any questions? Okay. You know, let's spontaneously break into two-person and three-person groups. You know, three groups can go across the hall, one in each office, one in the waiting room. One group can stay here. I recommend the group back by the window be the one that stay here, because then they don't have to climb over other people. And, you know, over time, it's handy to mix so that you're not always in the group, the same group each time. This afternoon, you're going to want to be in the same group as you are this morning, because we're going to be addressing these automatic thoughts, and so it's handy if you have the same therapist and client. So, go ahead, and I'll be circulating around.
Okay, is it Heather?
Yeah, we're going to try to spend about a half an hour on this. Okay. So why don't you guys be the group that stays here, because you're the last people in this room. Decide who's going to be therapist and who's going to be client.
You be a therapist.
Oh, great. All right. All right. How are you today?
Okay.
Good. Well, what do you think you'd like to work on today?
Let's see. I'm still annoyed by one of my work situations. I'm pretty sure they're working me like a dog at this point. I'm pretty well at the point where I'm probably going to ask to get deassigned from that thing, I guess. You know, I don't think I can keep up.
Okay, so specific goal then for us today is to determine if that's the right course of action for you, or...
Yeah, I'd say that.
So you want to determine the course of action with your job situation.
Mm-hmm.
All right, great. So can you give me a specific example of what's going on there that makes you feel like you want to make a change?
We'll go with Friday of last week. The productivity requirement is, well, I mean, it's not a formal one, but basically what they're doing is they're scheduling me enough that I'm trying to do 30 minutes of work in sometimes 15 minutes, and you know, the hope, of course, is that if enough people don't show up, then maybe there'll be enough time. But trouble is that if most or anybody does show up, then I'm working through my lunch. I'm working past the time I'm supposed to go home. I kept a tab on it. You know, I worked 8.75 hours straight, and by the time I got done, I was irritable enough where I think I was about this close to like using profanity with an employee who simply walked into the office and asked if I had completed I think it was a prescription or something. It's like, well, you know, I hadn't had time to, you know, so much as take a restroom break. Mm-hmm. So I was plenty irritable, and I'm pretty sure I don't want to be irritable like that at work.
So it sounds like, from what you're saying, the productivity expectations are very high for you, and they're counting on clients not showing to give you a little bit of buffer time to get some work done, but in actuality, that doesn't seem to be happening.
It sometimes does.
Okay.
Yesterday it did. Friday of last week it didn't. So whether I will have a day that is manageable or a day that makes me bordering on crazy literally seems to happen at random. I have no control over it.
Okay. So walking into your day, you never know, is this going to be a day where I can get my job done within the parameters, or is this going to be a day where I have to hustle from...
Yeah, I suppose every single day I walk in with a sense of dread because I haven't the slightest idea whether I'll be, you know, in kind of good shape or half crazed by the end of the day.
Okay.
Okay, let me just cut in with some feedback. So, you know, in real life, we'd have a choice. Do we want to put our energy into pinpointing automatic thoughts? Do we want to, you know, put our energy into planning and problem solving? Do we want to put our energy into convincing the powers that be to make some changes? You know, since this is a role play and not real life, we're going to choose to focus on the automatic thoughts.
Right.
And here, in terms
of... in real life, I actually have a pretty good idea of what, you know, of some constructive courses of action.
Yeah. And in terms of pinpointing automatic thoughts, we've got some options about what point in time to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned dread at the beginning of the day, so we could pinpoint your automatic thoughts at the point where you're on your way into work and you don't yet know if it's going to be a busy day or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you mentioned irritability. We could focus on your thoughts at the points where you get irritable and you would prefer not to get irritable. You know, we don't yet know if there are thoughts and feelings after the end of the day that would be worth understanding, too. And so, in real life, I might, on my own, have an idea of which of those points is going to be most productive to focus on, in which case I could say, gee, I think it's going to be most useful to focus on whatever I think it's most useful to focus on. If I don't have a strong sense, I could give the client some input. Gee, we could focus on your thoughts and feelings on the way into work, or we could focus on the thoughts and feelings at a point where you're finding yourself irritable, you know, or we could focus on your thoughts and feelings, you know, at the end of the day on your way home. You know, do you have a preference about which of those we focus on?
Okay.
And, you know, that sounds like a good next step, and I'll go see other groups and be back in a little while.
All right, sounds good.
Does that make sense? So, since I'm not hungry and I don't need to eat it, and it's I know that it's just like it's like stress eating or like eating for the heck of it because it's there. Like for example, so I'm standing in line and I got my gluten-free healthy meal, right? And then one of the ladies that I work with, she's like, "Oh, I made this buffalo chicken dip. Do you want it?" And I sat there and I'm like, yes, no, go, yeah, I want it, I mean, it looks good, and she's like, oh, it's homemade, and I'm like, yes, I want it, you know, but then I'm like, oh, I shouldn't eat that, if I eat it now, then I'm gonna keep eating the chips, like, then I'm
now,
gonna
let me
be
just
able
cut
to
in.
Focus.
How many of those thoughts do you have written down?
I have 4 right now.
Great, because, you know, personally, I can't write fast enough to keep up with all of those,
okay.
and nothing wrong with that. You know, actually, I write slower than average, but it's completely legit to say, hold on, and write, you know, catch up, and then say, and what, you
know.
Okay.
All right, so what I heard you say so far is that I'm not hungry, I shouldn't eat that, I don't need to eat that, and that would be amazing to eat. So.
Well, yeah, and, I mean, that's just the start. There's a lot more thoughts than that second. There's,
so you're right. I only
yeah. There, so, and so she's going to tell you, and you can write them down.
Right.
Yeah. There's the, I guess, like, I'm going to feel bad if I eat it. I shouldn't eat it. Why can't you just not eat the potato chips today?
Okay, so let me catch up. I'm going to feel bad if I eat it. I shouldn't eat it. What was the third one?
Why can't you just not eat the potato chips today?
Why not just the potato chips?
Why can't you just? It's the double negative.
Yeah.
That's the thought that's what it sounds like in my head.
Mm-hmm. One other just little suggestion, because this highlights something that gets complex in pinpointing out hypnotic thoughts. We've got a bunch of thoughts about why not eat it, mm-hmm. which obviously aren't working well enough, or you wouldn't be working on this.
Yes.
And we haven't yet heard a lot of thoughts about why eat it. So if I notice, I'm hearing one part of the story. Okay, I now understand the strategies she uses to try to stop herself, and they don't work, so we need more effective strategies. But I have, you know, I would say to her, gee, so you've told me a bunch of thoughts that sound like attempts at restraining yourself, but they don't work very well. Are there any thoughts sort of voting in favor of eating them? You know, what?
It tastes good. And it feels good. I mean, it tastes good. I don't. Mm-hmm. It's
and
a reward.
It's easy to overlook the simple, obvious thoughts. You know, it tastes good. It'll feel good. Are automatic thoughts, and they have a big impact. You know, and one of the things that trips people up a lot at the beginning is they tend to overlook the thoughts that are so obvious they seem to go without saying. For all the people who are trying to get to the gym more regularly. Probably everybody in that category is having a thought that I'm too tired. Mm-hmm. And some of the therapists get that written down. A lot of therapists just skate past and not read. Wait a minute, that's an automatic thought. It has an important impact, and it may or may not turn out to be true. And if I don't write it down, I'm not going to remember to address it.
Mm-hmm. Something that I'm aware of too, right, is that I feel like I earned it in some ways because I work out, because I generally eat healthy. Mm-hmm. Or, like, if the day has been particularly stressful or challenging, I'm like, well, I've earned that.
Mm-hmm. So that's a real valuable one to get written down. And you've got a bunch of automatic thoughts written down. That's what we're doing. Questions, comments, reactions?
No, that was very helpful.
Excellent.
Does it matter? Like, I know those. Some of those aren't rational. And I feel like some of the patients I work with know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a huge chunk of them don't. They don't even recognize
that. And so that's one piece of it. But also, a lot of people sort of presume, if I know it's not rational, then it's supposed to lose its power and have no effect.
Yeah.
And it doesn't necessarily work that way. You know, with some thoughts, it does work that way. If I'm thinking I'm a total failure, and I realize, wait, no, that's not true. You know, that is likely to immediately have me feeling differently. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if I've got a fear of flying and I'm thinking, wait a minute, flying a scheduled airline isn't, you know, is safer than freeway driving, that doesn't poof make me comfortable on airplanes. So, and we'll be getting into more of that shortly after the role play.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Battle. What specifically is the thought, the battle that you're having?
The battle is the fight inside of myself over the choice between eating something healthier and the choice between eating the toast with butter melting all over.
So the battle on which food group is going to win.
And I don't like that battle.
Okay.
I don't want to fight that battle.
Okay.
And just as cutting in with some feedback, I don't know what you've already gotten written down, but with the battle, it sounds like there are thoughts in favor of the toast with the butter melting all over it,
right.
And thoughts against having
it's
the toast.
Yeah.
And so we would want to get down the thoughts on each side there, you know, clearly enough to quote them back to her.
Okay.
How's it going so far? It looks like you've got a number of thoughts written down.
I do, I think. She actually told me a lot even in the beginning, so that helped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so if you've got thoughts written down, you've reflected them back, and that's what ran through her head, then you're done and ready to switch roles.
Yeah, because I was going to say, like, that battle, you know, what was the thought of the argument for both sides?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Any questions?
No, although I guess, yes, a little bit in the role play. So you have some follow-up questions for, like, each for the therapist and the
mm-hmm.
Should we be doing that after each time or at the end?
After each time is probably the best way to do it, because if you wait till the end, then it's harder to remember the details.
Okay. That's
okay.
And I didn't do that when I was observing. So.
That's, we did it the last time. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's our second. So, okay.
Yeah.
We can go back and do that.
Yeah, and so feel free to discuss. So it sounds like you've got one more person to go as therapist.
Yes. Yes.
Great. So I'll circulate. I may be back before they're done or not, depending on how the other groups are going.
Go home after this session and you take out your writing and you sit down with it, you're kind of torn between these two thoughts. And one is, I've worked hard all day and my mind deserves a break. And the other thought is, well, writing could be that break. Writing could be relaxing. So how do you make sense of those?
Ta-da! Well, actually, in terms of the role play, you don't make sense of those two. Hey, I've got some thoughts pinpointing. They're written down. That's what we're doing this morning. So obviously, in real life, you would go on. And, you know, shortly we're going to be talking about options for what you actually do with the thoughts once you've got them. But that's what we're shooting for. Any questions?
No, I don't know. It's been going pretty smooth.
It's very easy to work with.
Well, and, you know, when you've got psychologically minded, insightful, verbal people, this is much easier. If I could arrange to just have those, that would simplify life. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, we need to take it in smaller steps and, you know, work harder to get them to be able to tell us what we need to know. But, yeah.
Definitely.
Great. Have you both had a chance to be therapists?
No, yet.
Okay, so time to switch roles and do it the other way around. And when you're done, it should be time to rejoin the group in the main group.
Okay.
And I'll circulate around.
Thank God.
I think it's a constant undercurrent. I don't really believe that there's a specific time.
Yeah, in other words, I want you to kind of pick a time that you can remember, something where you can actually remember it. It was almost like physical, that, you know, with that property, it was literally making you uncomfortable. You could feel it, but you were not there. You weren't taking care of it. You were somewhere else. Where were you?
It's often when I'm at school, like when I'm not actively, you know, when there's been a break in my day and, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, okay, now, you know, I need to.
Okay. And actually, we'll even be try to be a bit more specific than that. I want you to think of maybe a time this week when you were at school, you were having that discomfort. Where were you? You know, were you in the classroom, a break room? You know, where were you?
Usually just sitting in my office.
Okay.
Let me just cut in with, you know, so when he's saying usually, generally, he hasn't picked one specific occasion. He's lumping together. He's saying this is what's going on typically. So a good follow-up was, well, pick one particular occasion. You know, where were you on that? You know, what day are we, time of day are we talking about? Where were you on that occasion? And what thoughts were running through your head on that occasion? Because that'll make it easier to get a clear picture.
Well, and I can even say about today, I can take this today, because this is an 8-hour day where I'm here, and normally I do work on the property on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it was a challenge for me to even come today, because I kept thinking, oh, I really would like to get over there and get that done today. So we can even be right in this moment.
Perfect.
So actually, yeah, what's interesting then is we actually have a couple of salient moments where you're having the same type of problem. Mm-hmm. One might be while you're at school on mm-hmm. some kind of a break at your desk. One might be literally today, mm-hmm. where you're here, you're not working on your property. if we had to pick a time that you want to focus on, which one would you pick?
Well, the most intense
today,
for me is...
would you pick at school?
No, I think today is most intense for me because when I'm at school, that's just a normal part of my routine and I get it. But today it was like, no, this is when I normally do X, Y, and Z. But, you know, now this is, even though it's by choice, it's something that's kind of broken that.
And actually, you you made an interesting statement. You said it was hard to come here today. And yeah, what are the thoughts that you kind of have right now about the property that are kind of, if we will, interfering with today? What thoughts do you have?
Well, I'm a list person, so this list, this punch list, is running through my head. Okay, you know, when you do get over there, you've got to take care of, you know.
All right, we'll pick about two or three items on the list. And,
well, I mean, I know I've got a couple electrical installation things I have to do. I've got, you know, some caulking in the bathroom. I've got some issues like that that have to be taken care of. That, again, really aren't critical, but as I said earlier, I'm that kind of person that likes to cross things off lists. And so until it gets crossed off, it just sits there and rolls.
And do you have any thoughts about what would happen if that just doesn't happen?
Well, the ultimate thought is that I'm working in between other contractors doing my part of the deal, and if I don't get what I need to get done, it might delay what they can get done, which delays the eventual profitability of this.
And the other suggestion I'll jump in with is what we're getting here is sort of a paraphrase, so this would be a good opportunity to say, you know, what's going to be work best for our purposes is to come as close as we can to an exact quote. How's that worded as it's running through your head in the heat of the moment? You know, and then after getting that, you know, so it sounds like we've got this running punch list through your head, basically a to-do list running over and over. We've got, you know, if I don't get my part done, then the next contractor won't be able to do his work. Does that cover it, or are there any other thoughts? I'll go circulate.
Okay. Yeah, the only, you know, I mean,
what kinds of, when you look at that table filled, what kinds of thoughts popped into your head?
I can't believe it's this big again. I can't believe there's so much coming in. How are we going to get this organized?
Great. And I'll let you write, and you may need to get him to repeat some of that. And it's hard to write as fast. Has everybody had a chance to be a therapist?
No, not yet.
Okay. So you're going to want to quickly get the third person the chance to be a therapist.
Go to therapist. I need to
Yeah, it. I'll be quick.
That they're really prone to personal attacks if they need to disagreement. And so I think that I even gave some feedback in like your tone and your body language and the words that you're actually saying are offensive right now. Okay. And they didn't stop. It just kind of escalated. And then I was just like, I'm freaking done. Like, you're being mean to me, and that's when I lost it.
Okay, so the thought in your head right before you lost it also was, you're freaking mean, I'm done with this.
Yes.
Okay.
Like,
so
I asked you not to be mean, and you're still being mean.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Now I'm going to be mean back, I guess. Okay. But it's not a thought. I didn't think, now I'm going to be mean back.
Okay.
It's like I've tried to keep my cool, and I gave you feedback, and when that didn't work, now I'm just going to scream.
Okay. Okay.
And that's how I lost it.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've got some good automatic thoughts there.
Yeah.
I'm freaking done. You're being mean to me.
Yep. Are we good?
Did this really happen?
End scene? A version of that.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
It's been a rough week in my office.
Yeah,
there
I know.
There is a potential divorce.
Oh,
seriously.
Wow.
Between colleagues?
No, between a client and her husband because of the things that were said.
I know it's
in the heat of the moment,
yeah.
But it's been like 4 days. And
yeah.
Yes.
It's
yeah.
really, I mean,
because
more.
It's like disrespectful and...
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's amazing.
And they're
like,
kind of
some
problems
really,
anyway. But
well, yeah,
but
mm-hmm.
Yes. Politics
yeah.
really gets like to the heart of some.
Particularly this year.
Yeah,
yeah.
Any questions on the pinpointing automatic thoughts front?
I
I don't think so.
Did you have yours? Any?
Oh yeah, you did a great job of reflecting back.
I might have.
Has everybody had a chance to be therapists?
Yes.
Great. Where you wrote the automatic thoughts down, did you write it down completely enough so you'll be able to repeat them back this afternoon?
Yes, I hope so.
Great.
I don't know that it's verbatim.
Well, the goal is to write it down clearly enough so that you can repeat it back verbatim. Okay. Because if you change the wording, then it makes it harder to get a handle on. So feel free, if there's anything you need to clarify, feel free to take 2 minutes to clarify. And then we'll resume back in the main room. There's a group where the third therapist just started. And I'm going to go check in on the final group in just a second. So any questions before I move on?
No, thank you.
Great.
Write them down at all, or when you notice them coming up, have you practiced writing down the initial automatic thought and then maybe emotional or feeling reaction to it?
I haven't done that yet.
Let me cut in. It sounds like you guys have moved on to working on stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's time to rendezvous back in the main room.
Okay.
Any questions?
No, it was actually helpful.
Great.
Thank you.
So, this would be a really good idea. I don't want to have to do it. What else? I missed one.
Will I actually do it?
Will I actually do it? Any other thoughts?
I just want to relax today. I don't want to have to do my food journal.
Ta-da! Any questions?
I noticed a lot of the thoughts are kind of like questions instead of like declarative statements. Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to that in just a second.
Okay.
So time to rendezvous back in the main room.
Great.
Good job, guys.
Okay. Awesome.
Time to rendezvous in the main room.
Okay.
So the other groups are on their way.
Actually, out of curiosity, are the offices across the way cold?
Hey, good. How are you?
Yeah, last week I remember that office across the way was sunny. What's your wife's name again? Heather.
Okay. We'll take a 5-minute break at this point.
Oh, good.